This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
The National Football League presents the Pepsi Super Bowl 41 Halftime Show.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your Let Me Find Out You're a Business Man of Music News and Criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I never meant to cause you any sorrow. I never meant to cause you any pain. I didn't want to one time see you laughing, babe. Only want to see you laughing, yeah, in the purple rain, purple rain, purple rain.
You are listening to a thing that was very special when it happened. And certainly in the rearview mirror seems even more so. 2007, Prince played the Super Bowl halftime show. Super Bowl halftime show, certainly in the decade or so leading up to the Prince performance, could be a bit of a weird old person slash new pop star grab bag without a particular aesthetic position. The Prince show was maybe the most focused, sharp, and musically astute exponent of what the halftime show could be. Many people maybe just will remember it solely for the image of the shadow of the guitar, demonstrating in a particularly phallic way that he somehow got past the NFL and the censors. But really, it was about how good the music was. In the decade plus since then, the halftime show has been a bit more, how do we put it? It's been sloppy. There have been some good moments. And certainly in the last couple of years, the politics of the halftime show have been coming into focus because of the NFL's Colin Kaepernick problem and also other systematic issues surrounding the NFL in terms of how it's responded to concussions and et cetera, et cetera. And so the music community has been put in a position of debating whether or not to support the NFL by performing in the halftime show. I want to talk about that and so much more. It's a hot room today. It's a hot room. Two first-timers on podcast. Big energy here in the punk rock studio. That's right. To my left, Elena Bergeron is here.
Hello. Good morning. Hi.
New Orleans finest. Elena's an assistant editor in sports. Also, Elena, can you tell the people where you worked prior to all this? Let's just let the people know.
Oh God.
All the background.
Prior to this, I was editor-in-chief of SB Nation, which is a sports property at Vox Media. Prior to that, I was the founding EIC of what was the name of it?
So many publications. I ran so many publications, I don't even remember all of them.
Founding EIC of the basketball lifestyle blog, which was called the Triangle Offense, because that's not copyrighted. And I ran that for Complex for a while. And before that, I was a staff writer at ESPN, where I was for over a decade. ESPN, the magazine, not to be confused with the many, many other arms.
And also important to know that or to register RIP. That at your time, yeah, for sure,
yeah,
at your time at ESPN, you were doing work that now seems really common and widespread, but at the time you were doing it was not common and widespread, which is to say the intersection of sports and popular culture, interviewing athletes about their cultural interests, interviewing pop culture figures about their athletic curiosities, finding stories that exist at the Nexus. That is something we take for granted now. It's an obvious thing, but in the years of our Lord of the early 2000s was not such an obvious thing, but you were there.
Yes.
Putting it down.
Not for nothing. The very first piece that I got published in ESPN, the magazine, as an intern was the grand opening of the 40-40 Club.
Oh, wow.
I am old in one sense.
You are old in wisdom.
I just like being an OG. That's fine.
That's fine. This building could use a few of them.
Nice.
To Elena's right. Soraya Nadia McDonald is here. She is culture critic and the undefeated. I want to say, I don't know if your podcast, and by your, I mean just whoever's listening, I don't know if y'all got award winners on your podcast. Oh, I don't know. Certainly, I've not won any awards. But I don't know about your podcast, but I got an award winner. Soraya, tell the people what happened about a month ago. Just speak on it. No, this is talk your talk. That's what this is for.
Go, put it in the air.
That's right.
So I would like to say, even before last month happened, like...
Oh, you've been winning awards.
No. The first award of my career was having Elena Bergeron as my sports editor. For the Hilltop when we were both in college.
Woo!
Which, if you knew the Howard names University. That passed through the Hilltop at that time, you'd be like, wait, what? I'm just saying, because like Terrez Baylor is the lead NFL writer in Kansas City right now, so he's going to be at a Super Bowl, and Aisha Chaney was my co-editor, and she's a producer at NFL Network, so she produces all the good football stuff that you see on there. It was kind of a murderer's row.
Where's the oral history of the Hilltop?
In our digital archive.
Leak the group chats. Come on.
A month ago, I got an email saying that I was this year's George G. Nathan Award winner for dramatic criticism, because in addition to writing about film and TV and celebrity, I also write about theater.
Yeah, you write quite a bit about theater.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I wanted you to be a part of this conversation is I think that there are aspects of all of those things baked into what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, that's what, exactly. Exactly. So let's kind of get into why the halftime show exists. Forget its current incarnation. We have not said the words Sean Carter yet. We are walking our way up to that. Why does the halftime show exist? What function does it serve? And at what point did it become this kind of, whether it's a proving ground or a showcase or a kind of like half-cooked attempt at representing contemporary pop music the week after the Grammys fails to represent contemporary pop music?
I think it exists for the reason that most things in America exist, to sell things.
Mm.
Is that the wrong answer? I mean,
it's never the wrong answer.
Certainly to the scale of what the Super Bowl halftime show is now today, the underlying purpose of it is to sell ads against that block of programming. And I think the halftime ad rate is the highest in the total broadcast.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's where people want to be.
Have they seen the Maroon 5 performance from the other year? Like, do they know that that happened? They're aware of that?
I think there was some request for refunds.
If you work in an ad, here's the thing. If you work in an ad place, if you're an ad buyer for the Super Bowl and you thought that putting an ad next to the Maroon 5 performance is a great idea, email me at podcast@nytimes.com. I would like to have a word. Anyway, please continue.
Well, yeah. And I think that there are some ad companies that buy against halftime off GP way before the announcers are trotted out and everything.
They know, though. They know what's coming.
But because that's where you debut.
It's not Blueface.
My God, how I wish it was. Could it be NBA Young Boy?
It's halftime, baby.
Yeah.
Got up. Okay.
I did.
So ad dollars,
yeah.
You're trying to capture eyeballs in the middle of a game, which is obviously already one of the highest rated televised spectacles of the year in any year. It's not that the Super Bowl has some challenge to get people to watch the Super Bowl, but you have this big gap between the first half and the second half. about an hour, generally. You have to find a way to keep people engaged.
To keep people engaged, primarily the TV viewership audience. Right. I don't think they really super care what the live attendees, you know, think or see of that performance. I usually hear that they can't even really hear it properly.
I can't
in
even
the stadium.
Imagine watching it live.
Yeah, it's for the TV viewership. It's primarily to keep people tuned in and, you know, not turning over to whatever Vanderpump Rules counter programming exists on.
So was
another.
It the Puppy Bowl?
The Puppy Bowl is big.
Puppy Bowl. Yeah.
Sex in the City Marathon is big.
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Oh, now I know what I'm watching. I was just watching last night.
Problematic as in its I was own
trying,
ways.
But I was trying to come down off the Grammys last night in an episode where Carrie was wearing Aiden's engagement ring around her neck.
Yeah.
And then he broke through the wall in the two apartments. And then she spazzed out. And then, that was hot at like 5 a.m. last
she
night.
Trifling.
That was good. Oh, I mean, obviously, that's a very trifling stretch of the show. But
It's
good to know. I wonder which episodes will be available during the halftime this year. So I'm going to check in on that, and I'm happy to know. Soraya, are you of the mindset that there is the possibility for musical validity in this framework, or Prince accepted? Maybe Beyonce accepted.
Right. It's definitely not the rule. I can't even say that, like, you set yourself up to be disappointed, because I just don't expect anything from them at this point.
I watch it because I have to, because I'm paid to watch it. But I watch it largely resentfully. With the Maroon 5 thing last year, I don't want to keep coming back to them because it's cruel. But, you know, I'm always open to the idea that something unusual or magical could happen. I mean, this is, I think, like fundamental to the critical practice. Elena's an editor. She's neutral. She has no opinions. It's a paragon of neutrality.
Absolutely not neutral.
Not
if you have ever seen me sprint to a bar to watch halftime ever, it's only been on two Beyonce-related occasions, right?
Sure.
I was in New Orleans for Mardi Gras the year she performed in between the, Panthers-Broncos? Super Bowl. And
are those teams?
Those are, in fact, NFL teams.
I have no idea.
But that was
and
like
then
the boy,
power failed, right?
Well, that was the boycott Beyonce year, right?
Yes.
Where it was like, oh, God.
Oh.
Right. Formation year. That was later.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Because everybody was like, is Big Frida going to be there? Was really what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So.
I didn't mention at the top, and I should have. At the end of the conversation, Elena and I are going to stick around to do a little bit of chatting about another New Orleans icon who we lost recently, which is Fifth Ward Wehbe. So we're going to talk about that at the end. So stick around if you like bounce. Anyway, bye.
Yeah, but the other time was the power blackout year, because I was reporting a college basketball story at the time and was like, everybody out of my way, I gotta see a TV. And it was amazing, and Destiny's Child reunited, and Beyonce danced extra hard, and she was super fit, and then told everybody to give her back the photos because she was too fit. It was great.
Oh, right. That's when they had, like, the photos of her kind of hulking out.
Yeah, right. Which then led to like new restrictions on photos at Beyonce performances, as if there weren't already enough restrictions on photos at Beyonce performances.
Oh, and can I also just salute one extra Super Bowl halftime
moment?
Beyonce, do you remember the furor over she performed at Obama's inauguration, the national anthem, and people were like, she didn't really sing, it was too cold.
Oh,
yes,
yes.
And
then
it was like at a press conference.
The press conference from the Super Bowl halftime
show.
Like
in front of everybody, and it's like, any questions?
Yeah.
Just give the halftime show to Beyonce.
In the dawn's early light. What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare
So Beyonce's had two halftime show moments in the last decade. There was, this is 2013 is the first one. And then my preferred one, which is, it seems it's 2016, which is when ostensibly Coldplay is the headliner. But Coldplay...
And nobody remembers them.
No, I actually reread that, my review of that Coldplay. And the detail in it that I thought was the funniest, I did not remember, is... I think all the dancers are wearing like really colorful, like I don't know if it was tie-dye or just like pinks and purples and greens or whatever. And Coldplay's basically wearing like shirts that are like the color of this like coffee cup. Yeah. Like just like completely like, please do not look at us. Like we are not here. Like we do not exist. Like do not. And then Beyonce just shows up and like kind of like puts a boot and everything. So that was like, I liked the visual politics of that. As a person who's not excited about Coldplay and does not feel that they deserve a stage that big. But I liked that they knew they were smart enough to let Beyonce come and just
be Beyonce.
Just Beyonce all over the thing.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like, hey, we just have these long sleeve t-shirts. Like, we don't know what happened. Like, we're not even here. This is not a thing. But that is a rare occasion when you have an act that is self-aware about what the task is. And also when you have the opportunity for a Beyonce to kind of come in Beyonce, like the more likely and frequent thing is like what happened last year, which is like Maroon 5 taking the thing extremely seriously and then bringing out Travis Scott, who there are a few things that confuse me more than the persistent fame of Travis Scott.
I did not know that you fell on that side of the spectrum.
You mean the right side? Yeah, it's I'm always on the correct side of the spectrum.
It's lit. Yep,
it is. It's lit to feel this way, is what I can say. So that's more like more often what happens. And the performance is what, like 8 minutes long, the whole thing? It's like it's very carefully timed. It's like 8 to 8.5 minutes. Often people try to cram a lot into those 8 to 8.5 minutes. And it kind of invariably can't help but feel like a compromise. Does that seem fair?
Honestly, now that I think, Jesus, it probably takes longer to load everything onto the field than it does to do the performance itself.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, it's inevitably disappointing because there's so rarely any sort of element of weirdness. It's a very good way of trying to figure out, like, what is considered mainstream.
To that point, I think an interesting thing that I've noticed, if you look back at the 2000s Grammy halftime shows, they're pretty white and they're pretty old. Yeah. The 2010s ones at least kind of make a nod to, like, hip-hop exists. Like, you know, there are these nods kind of sprinkled throughout. I'm actually always surprised that the Grammys don't go just like whole hog and have like a country. Like, why is Luke Bryan not doing a Grammys halftime show? Thomas Rhett, Brooks and Dunn, Alan Jack. Like, I'm always kind of expecting there to be the one year where they're just like, we do not care. Like, we are only putting good old boys on the show.
Yeah, it's like
the
Body Like a Back Road halftime show.
Wow, a banger.
Sam Hunt was a college football player. So it's like worlds.
This podcast stands Sam Hunt. So, but I'm always a little bit low-key surprised that they don't do that.
Well, I mean, in a way, it does feel like, because there are so many chefs in the kitchen with regard to selecting who plays, making sure that, you know, they are going to abide by certain standards. Mm-hmm. It does feel like a function of the algorithm. It feels like whatever algorithm is at play, choosing your Spotify feed or, you know, your radio programming is also at play with selecting who's going to perform at the halftime show. It's like, okay, well, who has spent a couple weeks on Billboard, but like is popular with this target demographic plus X, Y, and Z, and you're just going to spit out some pyrotechnics, maybe a left shark, and, you know, that's just going to be the halftime show. And I think that kind of speaks to like why they're not memorable. It's like, what radio block is memorable?
To that point, Elena, the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show, which is the infamous wardrobe malfunction. That's not the only unusual thing about the 2004 halftime show.
Did Nelly perform?
Diddy.
Okay, yeah.
Diddy. Mm-hmm. And Diddy. Mm-hmm. Did he and Diddy. So I remember this year basically being like the rockin' jock halftime show. So according to n.wikipedia.org, noted data source, Jessica Simpson was on this. Is that true? Is that factual? TBD. I can't speak on if that's factual. Janet and Justin, Puff, Nelly, Kid Rock, when he was still sublimating his inner racism. That, I remember at the time, felt radical. It really was like some TRL. It was TRL, yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. And then, obviously, after that, the next year is Paul McCartney. And then you just get into, like, you know, sort of like nonagenarian white men for 5 years.
Before. You can't be trusted.
Yeah, not at all. And I do think, you know, with so much money on the line, the NFL being such a big business, they want to have a halftime show that is sellable. A person who knows a lot about selling things is Jay-Z, who is a rapper you guys might have heard of, and also a business man. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about what's been going on the last couple of years in the NFL. Elena, can you explain the crises that are that the NFL is bringing upon itself? Just like a quick primer.
Well,
spark notes.
There are many crises at any given moment, sure, in the NFL, yes, which is notable because they are great at subverting all of them and just getting you to watch anyway. This one in particular relates back to Colin Kaepernick, who had been a Super Bowl quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. They made a run to the Super Bowl. They did not win it. Who had the whole kneeling protest during the national anthem, during which he was protesting systemic inequality, which I don't think is a point that can be argued, and has since been blackballed from the league. Based on that protest, the popularity of the protest, and the general sort of pop music sphere's reluctance to commit to the halftime show because they felt like they would be undermining Kaepernick's cause last year.
Right, last year specifically, yeah.
Was a huge problem for the NFL.
Right, and Rihanna specifically spoke out about that. So, but she specifically said that it would be essentially unethical and irresponsible of her to undermine Kaepernick's principled position.
Right, and she was not the only person to have turned down a position in the Super Bowl halftime show. And a lot of the speculation and conjecture was that Jay-Z was actively calling people who the NFL had reached out to and saying, you know, we are standing in solidarity against this. Please consider not doing this. I think Meek Mill was another person who had gotten asked that year as well. So,
Sorrell, in your mind, is that a valid kind of protest to sort of say, like, we don't bang with this. We're not a part of this. If you don't support what Colin Kaepernick is doing, what we can do is withhold our talent. It's also worth noting, you don't get paid to do the halftime show. You get paid in publicity, but you don't get paid.
Wasn't there, like, a moment when the NFL was actually trying to get the acts to pay them, like, for the privilege of appearing, or at least, like, taking on some of the production costs?
The NFL was like, hit my Cash App if you want to. You want to perform on
like
it?
That? I think that, yeah, the Wall Street Journal had a story about that.
Pedro, I'm going to start charging people to be on podcast.
Finally.
Yo, at the end of every show, when I tell people to email me, I'm also going to give out my Venmo and my Cash App.
Yeah, you got to keep it Cash App or Zelly.
That's true. Like, that's true. Okay.
But I think that's a really like valid protest if you're going to say, like, I'm not going to do this. And this is why, you know, everybody has their line in the sand that they want to draw. And I think particularly like for this arena, because the NFL is looking for like people who are already established anyway, right? Like they're always looking for like the biggest name that people will recognize, yeah, whether it's Springsteen or the Rolling Stones or Paul McCartney or whatever other famous white man.
Kid Rock.
Kid Rock, right?
Great American musician, Kid Rock.
So if you are like in the position that Rihanna is in where you can afford to be like, no, but right, also this is why I'm saying no, that can be really powerful, especially if it has these ripple effects where someone who is not quite Rihanna level, but still like pretty recognizable is like, I can come into her fur coat that she's offering.
Yeah. I can catch the draft. Like I can
catch the draft.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's important that we mentioned briefly the Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson incident. And it's important to understand that from that moment forward and possibly prior to that, but I don't know if people were really thinking about the Super Bowl halftime show all crazy like that before that incident. the halftime show has been a site of the NFL presentation of a racial identity. It's basically like we let a bunch of rappers on stage, and then we had this terrible thing happen with Justin and Janet. We've rehabilitated Justin Timberlake to the point where he could perform at two Super Bowl halftime shows ago, mm-hmm. which was also wild corny. He also debuted his garbage Jordans that night.
While also doing a full, like, Man in the Woods.
Nope.
This isn't hip-hop nope. adjacent anymore.
Hard pass. Hard pass. But the NFL was willing to rehabilitate Justin Timberlake and not willing to rehabilitate Janet Jackson. So the halftime shows dating back to 2004, and especially with the pivot to all the sort of like elderly white men, it is a site of white performance and white identity. That's how it has felt to me.
So they box themselves in with that in a way that is convenient, especially like if you think about somebody like Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger's ancient pelvic thrusting mm-hmm. is not going to result in letters to the FCC. What's really frustrating, I think, particularly with like female pop acts, like once you start to think about Madonna or Lady Gaga, is like how many of them, especially in like the early days of their careers, are encouraged to build a persona based on their sexuality, based on how much skin they're willing to show, how provocatively they're willing to dance. And then you have this conflict where you have this like bumping up against the NFL's own self-image and marketing as family entertainment. And you can watch this with your children and like everyone is going to be on their best behavior and we're not going to think about, you know, anybody who's been charged with domestic violence or rape or any of these things. Mm-hmm. And so if you are a female pop performer who has gotten to this point in your career where it's possible for you to be like invited to perform sure. at the Super Bowl, all of a sudden it's like, okay, but just don't be too much of you.
Be the you that we expect, right? It's a hypersexuality that we sort of know. So, like, I think about that a lot because Pepsi is obviously one of the big sponsors of the halftime show, and they had the whole Cardi B campaign through Christmas, and which I thought was, like, the most remarkable piece of capitalism because I love Cardi B, but, you know, she's uh-huh. basically being like, give cash for Christmas. And I'm like, to have a former stripper on TV at Christmas hey. Going, give cash and getting paid to do so, I was like, cake up, Cardi. Like, do it.
Good
also,
for her.
Also, Pepsi is swill. So to that point, I'm thinking about the 22 Super Bowl halftime show, which is the Madonna MIA middle finger year.
Right.
And so, again, you have the NFL kind of being like, well, okay, we've had like 9 years of white guys. Like, you know, let's have a show. And there's, again, here's the lineup that year. Madonna, LMFAO, Cirque du Soleil, Nicki Minaj did this?
Yep.
I have no memory of that. Mm-hmm. MIA, CeeLo, like a bunch of drum lines and dance troops. But again, it's like, well, we'll have 7 people on stage. What's the odds that something could go wrong? You know, like, what's the odds that any of those people in their 9 seconds will do something that will be disruptive? And then our girl Maya comes through with the extended digit. But to me, what that was is sort of the first self-aware halftime show. It's the first halftime show where the people who chose to do it understood the political valence of it, the racial valence of it. They chose to make it something bigger than a compressed performance in the middle of a sporting event. They took a bigger philosophical and political approach to it. And I think that's happened, obviously, with Beyonce. It's happened in other moments. But that, to me, is the first one where people really say, oh, if you're going to do this, if you're going to engage, if you're going to play with the NFL, if you're going to play on their terms, you actually have to be self-aware about it. And you have to try to find a way to inject some kind of counter-narrative or parallel narrative. That's how it feels in retrospect. I mean, obviously, we can't play the sound of MIA giving the middle finger, but can we just play whatever music was
Did
playing?
Did they do Swagger Like Us? Was that why she was on there?
It was Give Me All Your Lovin', which is a Madonna record, and
right.
Nicki and MIA just there.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, just there. It was a Grammy moment.
Yeah.
They were like, we couldn't get Britney and Christina, so we'll do this one. I don't know. Supersonic, bionic, uranium. So I'm breaking more tricks. Let's play that it's sick. I'ma say this once, yeah, I didn't give a shit. Don't play the stupid.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
When that happened, again, I think it kind of broke the fourth wall a little bit.
It's always a brown woman acting up.
But it also, it fundamentally changed. Because look, I have had to write about halftime shows as part of my job since I've been at the paper. So it was 37 years that I've been here. I've had to write about halftime shows. And I feel like, I hope someone's not going to like read all the old ones and prove me wrong. But I feel like that was the first year where I was like, I don't really have to write about the songs. It's kind of not important what the songs were, or like, did it kind of come together? Was it a coherent performance?
Right.
That's not what this is about. That felt different that year. If someone like Googles and finds out that I didn't write about the Super Bowl halftime show that year, just like on my Brian Williams, Ronald Reagan, like conflating things, I apologize in advance. But I had these thoughts whether or not they appeared in the New York Times. How does that register for you guys?
That's the thing that makes you sort of, or at least makes me curious to tune in now, especially
the meta narrative.
Yeah, as post Beyonce formation, giant afros. It's almost like the question now that you're sort of thinking of as this is coming up is like, what can this person get away with? Like, what can they get in there that maybe isn't in like the reams of like paperwork that they've had to, you know, set out in terms of like their agreement with like, this is what is going to happen in each of these, you know, in minute one and then minute two and then, you know, and find a way to sort of sneak something in there. I mean, with MIA, I think the thing is that she was not like the headlining performer there. She's, if you're there, cause like an accessory to Madonna, you know, like, what does it cost you to throw up a middle finger?
Well, apparently your entire musical career. But you know, that's hey. She's also coming off kind of not a great record.
Yeah.
But again, I think what you're saying really underscores an important point, which is what you are watching during the Super Bowl halftime show is not a musical performance. What you are watching is essentially a huge-scaled brand collaboration / tug of war.
Yes.
It is the brand of Beyonce married with the brand of the NFL, or potentially the brand of Beyonce versus the brand of the NFL. And that's what makes the 2016 Beyonce arrive so intense.
Yes.
So intense.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually stupefied the NFL signed off. Like, it sort of blows my mind. These are not open-minded people from what I can tell. Elena, feel free to spill any tea on what you know about how open-minded the people of the NFL are.
Well, you know, they value the brand above all else is what people normally say. Protect the shield. And so there's nothing as valuable as what people perceive to be true about the league. And so that certainly inspires all the decisions they make about the halftime show. But I think that, like, the point that you're making, like, we have to acknowledge the fact that based on individual artists' brands, people can get away with more or less depending on who they are.
True.
So, like, if Katy Perry had come out and, you know,
and
like,
done Formation?
Well, no. But, like, if she had come out and, you know, was like, Black Lives Matter, I think people would have been like, whatever. Whereas, like, if you have a Black artist come out and say that and make a moment of it, it's obviously a bigger deal because it's so much a part of identity politics. And, again, like, what artists build their brands around. So, like, similarly, when we think about this year, and it's going to be so heavily Latino focused in Miami, like, if J-Lo comes out and she makes a statement about Puerto Rico and, you know, U.S. support of Puerto Rico post-hurricane, post-earthquake, I don't think that that will be perceived as super woke or super challenging or any sort of a clash with the NFL or the brands involved, because it feels like, oh, well, that makes sense that you would say that there.
I wonder, and we, you know, we were talking earlier about the kind of behind the scenes machinations. I wonder, especially given the musical theme of this year's halftime show, did they reach out to Bad Bunny? And then is part of the reason, if they didn't, because he's been extremely outspoken politically and he feels like a potential liability to the NFL brand. Whereas, you know, Mr. 305, who obviously is also not Puerto Rican, but like, you know,
Dale.
The most relevant hip house artist of the 2000s, Pitbull.
I'm not playing Pitbull.
Yeah, you, that's fine. I play it in my home. I don't need to hear it on podcast. That touches on something that Soraya and I were talking on the phone a few days ago about this. Circling back to the Kaepernick moment and kind of what the NFL feels like its responsibilities are politically in the wake of the Kaepernick moment. And we haven't really talked about the Jay-Z thing. So basically, Jay-Z, after potentially calling around last year and getting people to not participate in the halftime show, which leads you to a Maroon 5 halftime show. You know how you have clout is everybody more famous than Maroon 5 says no. And then you're stuck with Maroon 5. That's actually how you know you have clout. So, but Jay then leveraged that clout and then made a deal. Elena, what are the terms of that deal?
If I knew that, you know, I would be breaking news, not only for the New York Times, but for the rest of entertainment. Because that deal has been, I think, in a lot of ways, willfully opaque. And it wasn't particularly spelled out at the time.
It is a partnership with Roc Nation. So basically, it's a Roc Nation NFL partnership. And that Roc Nation is responsible for booking the halftime show, in essence?
Helping with the halftime show in a non-specified manner, but also they're collaborating with the NFL and with the NFL's Players Coalition on a little program they like to call Inspire Change, which is about certain social justice issues, but not all of them. And so at the start of the season, the first glimpse into what this partnership was going to be was around the NFL kickoff in Chicago. They had a big concert and everything else, and there were community initiatives, which, if you remember, generated a lot of backlash on the internets because one of the charities, the local charities in Chicago, that they went to visit and donated money to, people dug through the tweets. There are always tweets. And one of the women that runs the program was chopping off the dreadlocks of one of the teenage participants. Aside from fueling the skepticism about what this partnership is, you know, it kind of brought out to light, like, well, how are you picking these charities? And, like, who does the vetting and whose responsibility is that? And no one had a clear answer.
What exactly are they? What exactly are they championing anyway?
Well, it also like kind of like lays waste to the notion that you assume the NFL on their own would be kind of butterfingered about this. Ostensibly partnering with an organization like Roc Nation, what the NFL is hoping is like, well, we don't know, but like you guys know. So like basically just don't get this wrong. And then even an organization like Roc Nation could potentially
get capitalizing it wrong. On like Jay-Z, like he brings the imprimatur of black wokeness, I guess, somewhat capitalistic black wokeness. That doesn't feel like
woke capitalism.
I say rapitalism.
Ooh, wow. Okay. That's like a 90s source word.
Yeah.
I mean,
capitalism.
A businessman.
That's Maine.
Maybe not doing that, but that was part of some of the internal tensions with the NFL. Was particularly Chicago brought to light the idea that there were players in Chicago with the Bears who were quite outspoken about the fact that it's like, oh no, we've been working in the community. Why didn't you ask us about this? Right. And so it sort of laid bare some of the problems with like the logistics and the actual point of this collaboration, which we'll see by halftime if those have been worked out.
But see, and here's my other question, this to circle back to what we were talking about on the phone, which is, so this is the first halftime show done with the participation of Jay and Roc Nation. the NFL clearly has a race problem. From what I can tell, there are no black performers on this episode, this year. I mean, obviously we're taping before, so we don't know. But, you know, it's Jennifer Lopez and Shakira. Obviously it's in Miami. The part of that is because of locale. But I wonder if there isn't also maybe sort of Jay struggling to get people to.
You don't think he has Trick Daddy's number?
You think they're going to let Trick? You think they're going to let Trick Daddy dollars? Trick Dad, not just Trick Daddy. Trick Daddy dollars.
Trina,
Trick Uncle kids. Luke. Yo, first of all, that's a different. That's a halftime show I want to be at. But do you really think that they're not going to do that?
That's so funny, because Uncle Luke is actually like
the perfect person.
I mean, kind of, yeah. And he's, I don't know if you guys saw the Stars docuseries that he was a part of, that I think LeBron's production, LeBron produced this, which was basically like about these kids in Miami in this like youth league.
Oh, he's a coach.
That ends up, right, that like sends all these kids to the NFL. Like he actually would have been kind of perfect for that.
I mean, Uncle Luke is not without his own problems.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Right.
But they feel like very typical sorts of problems that the NFL could just kind of like bulldoze over if they wanted to.
Pocket watch it like kangaroos. Tell these clowns we ain't amused. Nana clips for that monkey business. 4-5 got change for you. Motorcades when we came through. Presidential with the planes too. Went better get you with the residential. Undefeated with the cane too. I said no to the Super Bowl. You need me, I don't need you. Every night we in the end zone. Tell the NFL we in stadiums too. Last night was a f***ing zoo. Stage diving in a pool of people.
But do you guys not find it curious that the year after Rihanna and other performers, other black artists said, you know what, we're with Cap. We're not about this. Jay-Z showing up and basically switching teams and being part of the NFL's renovation plan, basically. I don't know.
Sir Alex.
Nobody's helping me out here.
I'm so just exhausted by his like opportunistic institutionalism. And it doesn't, I hate that it is like so coded in like, I'm going to uplift the people. Like, no, you are uplifting you. Like, just stop washing it in that. And so like that's what's really frustrating about this. Like it feels like he wants to have this both ways. And it's like, I mean, you don't have to. You have had like multiple stages of your career. You are middle-aged. There are clearly other things that you want to accomplish at mm-hmm. this point. But can we just separate these two things?
Basically, it doesn't need the veneer of...
Right, because like nobody believes it anyway.
So do you fundamentally, because it does seem that certainly in the immediate aftermath of the announcing of the NFL Rock Nation deal, at least on Twitter, the energy was not positive for Jay.
Can you stop being cute? You saw the COINTELPRO meme. Oh, there were deep cover memes. I mean, you should name what you saw, and that is what I saw.
Okay.
And I think that is the most immediate criticism that people were making, especially once it was revealed that like Jay-Z hadn't really talked to Colin Kaepernick before entering into the deal.
Yes. And again, just for additional context, there was this idea, and I don't know how fact-based it was or if it was just we hope-based, but that in the prior moment before the deal had been inked, that there was some kind of lockstep between what Jay-Z was doing behind the scenes and what Kaepernick was doing in public and presumably also behind the scenes. And then when Jay-Z signs this deal, that all basically falls apart in like 15 minutes on Twitter. Shouts to Nessa.
Right. The thing that I think that like has not been said well, particularly on the Rock Nation side of things, and it's interesting because Jay-Z is so tactical about language usually, and I mean that's his brand.
Yes.
That you know that when Oscar So White hit, that everyone in Hollywood rallied to like four creators. They were like, Octavia Spencer, we're gonna make you EP of this, you know. Mm-hmm. Can we have Lena Waithe write everything? It became that moment of like, who is the most proximate symbol of diversity, and how can we give them the most money and the most latitude to fix this? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's just an NFL way of solving, quote unquote, issues of diversity. I think that's
what
happened. No,
they did it with Me Too, too.
Right. They're like, can we give you money just to do this whole Booksmart movie and just do it by?
I mean, that's how you end up having, like, someone like Brie Larson having to present an award to Casey Affleck.
Shots. I didn't, y'all didn't think y'all were coming to Popcast for Casey Affleck shots today. And yet, here they are. Do we know if the NFL courted Jay-Z or if Jay-Z courted the NFL? Do we know, has that been reported?
Hasn't he wanted, he wants to be an owner, right?
He wants to be an owner. He's good friends with Robert Kraft, who owns the Patriots. And I think a lot of this was brokered through those sort of back channel good old boy networks, of which Jay-Z is now a part because he has so much money. But I think he had been speaking to Kraft and speaking to Goodell about needing to do something and offering his services as a person who could be a help. Now, is that a savvy business move? Yes, because if the NFL is just going to write a check and give you a ton of power over its biggest show of the year, why wouldn't you take that?
But would artists feel like they could say no to Jay-Z now? Because again, I do find it curious that in the year, and we haven't even talked about the kind of like how the Kaepernick thing rolled out this year, which is for months and months and months, more than a year, he had been denied even a workout to be able to work out for scouts from teams. And then all of a sudden there was this kind of like, wait, then hurry up. Hey, he's got a workout and a bunch of scouts showed up, but the terms are bad. So he goes and works out at some high school field. And the NFL is like, well, we tried. Okay, thanks. That's a wrap. Never think about this again. In part, I assume, to clear the way for like a re-embrace of the brand, of the NFL brand and the halftime show brand, et cetera.
Yes, I think that is absolutely correct. But I think that, you know, it's hard to say or to understand which came first or how early this was discussed, because as part of the big Roc Nation press conference with Goodell, you know, there was that moment which I think shocked everybody in the room.
Okay, I think we've passed kneeling. Yeah, I think it's time to go into actionable items.
Do you want people to stop it?
No, I don't want people to stop protesting at all. Kneeling, I know we're stuck on it because it's a real thing, but it's a form of protest. I support protests across the board. We need to bring light to the issue. I think everyone knows what the issue is, and we're done with that.
I think that was a moment that received so much more backlash than anybody in that room expected, that that became part of the conversation, where it's like, well, you know, this is someone who, in his absence, is becoming a martyr. He's becoming a bigger symbol than he would be if you let him play. And so let's do the thing and, like, give him what he says he wants, which is an opportunity. Now, was the NFL acting in good faith? I think Colin Kaepernick would tell you absolutely not. And so that fell apart. But that was widely perceived to have been brokered by Kraft and Jay-Z being in Goodell's ear.
Do you think that there is a sort of a stink that kind of remains over the halftime show and potentially people would in the future continue to not want to be a part of it, that their loyalty to the political support of Kaepernick and the values that Kaepernick was kneeling for and was punished for is more important than Jay-Z being like, hey, bro, it's cool?
The interesting person in that scenario really is Rihanna. Because he was her mentor for, like, years and years and years. So we just, like, witnessed that the annual brunch that they have now, which has, like, very clearly become what I think you could – what, like, Clive Davis's, like, Grammy party used to be in terms of, like, the thing that you want to be photographed at and who are you in proximity to and, right, which
is – somebody on Instagram, I think it might have been Kodak, Lenny S, said, Hove made his own Easter, which he basically is.
There was a good tweet last year, not this year, but last year at the Roc Nation brunch or in the media after, where someone was like, I seen dudes risk it all for a pic with Hove at the Roc Nation brunch today. Not even a pic with Beyonce.
It's hilarious to me because in that couple, I do think that the roles have switched.
You mean the Beyonce is the radical and like that?
That she's the radical, but also just in terms of like social capital. It's fascinating to just sort of watch the two of them, especially after they've moved to L.A. and the way they're sort of positioning themselves there. What was hilarious to me about the photos from the Roc Nation brunch, she doesn't do anything publicly that's not on purpose anymore.
Yeah, of course.
And so the flip-flopping of the clothes that they were wearing, where she's wearing basically a version of the blue suit that Jay wore in the Ape video, and Jay is the one who's basically like sporting this pink suit.
That's right.
And I was like, oh, this is really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Actually, someone asked him about it, and he said it was mauve.
It is.
Point is very much taken.
But like, in terms of like communicating visually without saying anything, she's so good at it.
She's really good. Should we close out this segment with a Rihanna song I would like to hear at a hypothetical halftime show?
Ooh.
If the brand of Rihanna and the brand of the NFL can ever find a way to collab effectively without compromising political values, which seems unlikely.
I'm trying to guess what you're about to say.
Oh, it's not going to be that. It's not like some deep cut. Okay, well, let's all name a Rihanna song that we would like to hear.
The Super Bowl halftime friendly Rihanna song is obviously Diamonds.
Yes.
Right.
But I would like to hear Bitch Better Have My Money. So let's listen to a little Bitch Better Have My Money, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the second line.
Bitch Better Have My Money. Y'all should know me well enough. Bitch Better Have My Money. Please don't call me on.
Okay, before we jump into the next segment, just a quick note. Next week's episode, listener mailbag. You know what time it is. You know the vibes. Send all your questions to popcast@nytimes.com. Any question you have, whether it's about a previous episode, something we've talked about, something we haven't talked about that you'd like to hear us yammer on about, recent records, what Pedro's most curious about, really open field. Drop us a line, podcast@nytimes.com. Back with Elena, who is going to talk with me about Fifth Ward Weeby. So a couple weeks ago, Fifth Ward Weeby, who was a very important New Orleans bounce rapper, passed away. He was 41 years old, not 42, as was widely reported. Although I have some inclination as to why people were not totally aware of that. Elena, your New Orleans commitments run deep. Probably the only other person in the building who I could commiserate with about Fifth Ward Weeby. So Weeby had been popular for quite some time in bounce. Can you talk a little bit about what his role was in the city and what he brought to the genre?
Yeah, Fifth Ward Weeby is just a historic figure in the bounce community, mm-hmm. but also like one of the most just like happy Pied Piper figures in bounce music. Like, I think that was one of the things that was most notable when people were remembering him or posting about him on IG. You know, the idea that, like, he would get on stage and do the Beanie Weenie for 20 minutes, you know, local dance.
That's
Google
right.
It.
That's
I don't know what
no,
to tell you.
Just or, if you can say it, you can imagine it.
Right. Or, like, he would do segments on the local news with, like, Sheba Turk and, you know, be super funny.
Is that a local newscaster?
Yes,
the Kaidi Tong of New Orleans?
It's way better than that.
Damn, what?
You're right.
Now I'm going to walk out of my own show.
You totally should, because my parallel is always Rosanna Scotto. If you're not famous like Rosanna Scotto, I got nothing for you.
First of all, you're talking to an outer borough Italian. That's fine. I can accept that.
You're welcome. But yeah, before Weeby was somebody who had been famous within bounce for a long time.
Shake it like a dog. Actually, Pedro, can we play before Weeby's part of Shake It Like a Dog? It's a Cain and Abel record.
And Abel, my neighbors growing up and grew up on the same block as Cain and Abel down the street.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. Right. And if I can't say this enough, anybody who knows me knows that I went to middle school with Lil Wayne at McMaine So you just kind of get that sense that, like, those musicians are always all around and sort of in your peer group. And certainly Fifth Ward Weebu was somebody that, like, was with No Limit and, you know, had gone the indie route and then also had a latter stage hit.
Yes.
With Let Me Find Out.
Let Me Find Out.
Which is one of the top five funniest songs of all time.
Great record. Unusually long song. It's like a long, you know, I think, well, no.
It's not long for a bounce song.
No, no,
the
I know.
The whole point is to keep dancing.
No, I know, but it's funny because sometimes I think of bounce songs, obviously they return time and again to certain refrains or themes. They don't necessarily have, like, narrative through a lot. Like,
oh, right.
And the way that Let Me Find Out, it's just like a consistently unfolding narrative. It just, like, it just keeps pivoting and changing, and it returns to the same word set, but it just keeps evolving.
It's a bounce opera, because if you've seen the video that accompanies it, you know, Let Me Find Out That Ain't Your Real Booty Meat is a top five line ever in rap. Fight me. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
That's right.
See, that's what needs to be on stage at Lincoln Center.
So, yeah, it's a really shocking loss that is, like, really deeply felt that should not be belittled by the idea that, like, his lyrics were not Nas level. No one cares.
Oh, we don't. First of all, this we don't belittle Fifth Ward Weebu on
got
this.
Got the toes off the easy. Turn no, around. Touch the crowd. Turn it over easy.
We should also mention, so Weebu had a bit of a pop breakthrough moment a couple years ago. So he ends up on Nice for What, which mm-hmm. is a very big Drake record. Elena, you and I have emailed briefly about the kind of, like, micro flicker of widespread bounce music interest. Drake is someone who obviously is understood to be a student of regional styles.
That's a nice way to put it.
This is a pro Drake podcast. This is a pro Drake space. I'm sorry.
I dance to Drake all the time. I'm not against it.
He is an extremely astute musician who has the ear of a critic, and I respect it. That's all I'm going to say about that. So Drake, I think this came off of, I want to say, Tez's Instagram story, that Drake reached out to Tez and was basically like, I have this record that kind of sounds like a bounce record or needs, like, a real bounce energy. And then Tez reached out to Weebu, and then Weebu went out to L.A. And then in some old Weebu interview I found, he said that they, like, went out to the club, got incredibly drunk, and then went back and, like, made the parts that end up on Nice for What, which sounds real. But that is maybe the highest profile bounce music moment in American and Canadian pop.
Well, I think so, but you have to follow that up with Drake's In My Feelings.
Yes.
Which samples Magnolia Shorty, and, you know, that was a huge moment as well. And linking all of this back to Wayne and the Cash Money influence, like, when you think about songs like Truffle Butter, which have a clear, you know, bounce underline to them, and certain songs that have been derivative of them. I'm so sorry because John gets all my late night emails that are, like, about Yo Gotti.
That's
and
fine.
So I'm like, did you hear this Yo Gotti song? That's Moneybag Yo got about, you know, like, that's.
There's also the G-Eazy and JT from City Girls on the London on the Track song that's basically just a bounce record. Juvenile's on that record. Juvenile basically started out as kind of like a bouncer, a bounce adjacent rapper. If you listen to, like, pre-Cash Money Juvenile, when he was on Warlock, I think, those are bounce or bounce-ish records. They're not like DJ Jimmy records, but you know, like, they're not that, but they're like, that's clearly where the influence
they
is being drawn from.
They come out of the bounce tradition.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, to circle back to Weebu, gone obviously way too soon, wanted to take an opportunity to honor him. And we should definitely go out with as much as we can squeeze in of Let Me Find Out. Don't you know I even want your kids for you? I got a new purse and a new wig for you. Don't you know I love you? I go hard for you. I even hustled up a food stamp card for you. I say, bitch, don't think you're all that. I can hit you from the back for some wing shag. I say, bitch, don't think you're all that. I can hit you from the back for some wing shag. I say, let me find out you trying to act. Gossip did it. Let me find that is our show. Let Me Find Out that Elena Bergeron and Soraya Nadi McDonald were A-plus guests. Let Me Find Out that you can email me at podcast@nytimes.com if you know about ad buying during the Maroon 5 halftime show or any other sketch behind the scenes details. Let Me Find Out you can subscribe to Popcast anywhere you got your audio content.
that, be that Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartRadio, etc., etc. And let me find out, you can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Let me find out, our producer is Pedro Rosado from Medstepper Media. And damn sure let me find out. I'm going to see you next week.
Let me find out your old man turned snitch. Let me find out your old man wears sandals. Let me find out he watched a Lifetime channel. Let me find out you got 7 8 chords.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.